right here, so. Oh, we topped it. We cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by your hosts, Kevin and Mark.
How are we?
Not the best.
Why?
I haven't played golf.
Well, I am the best because I haven't played golf.
Yeah, you've given up.
I fucking hate it.
You've given up, haven't you?
Well, I'm still trying to get over Scotland, to be honest.
I'll tell you, I haven't played golf, but that was an absolute lie because, well, I haven't played, but I've been for, was it this time last week and I've been for my lesson already? I'd been with David, hadn't I?
Yeah.
But I booked in for a short game lesson. I just heard this Kinnear, when I was talking about like this new short game coach.
That you pay for that, yeah?
What? Nah. I haven't paid for that yet.
Go on, tell that. You can tell that story as well.
I forgot all about that. Wow, that's all just like, that feels like a year ago to me, that.
Go on.
So anyway, went down to Hailston and got a chipping lesson. Great range, by the way. Unbelievable facility. And I got a short game lesson off Mike Timpson down there, who teaches the lineage system. And he said he left me down there with a basket of balls and I was just chipping. And then I took them and hit them on the range. I was chatting to Kinnear and I just like walked out. And Kinnear texted me saying, did you pay for that lesson there? And I was like, nah. So I text Paul back saying, can you phone up and pay? And then he didn't text me back. And then I just forgot about it. And now, here we are.
He's up in Scotland at the minute, isn't he?
A week later, yeah. Good start as well by him, wasn't it? There, yeah. 5 under.
Very good, yeah.
But the chipping lesson, I was discussing this with David on the weekend. Like, he's like, you use the bounce of the club and let the club do the work. And then Dave's like, all right, yeah, so what do you do with the bounce when in my chipping technique? Like, he's like, does the bounce just get off, does it? He's like, the bounce is always there. And I was like, oh, yeah. And David's got the thought process of the shaft lean is meant to be, if the shaft's at 50, the head's at 58 degrees, which is like it's meant to be, you're 58,
yeah,
then the shaft will be ahead of the ball. That's David's argument against this technique, because in this technique, you put your hands parallel.
So give him more loft.
Give him, yeah, well, just the hands parallel. Or if you want to play a flop shot, put your hands behind the ball.
Yeah.
So then David was saying again, he's like, well, if you start it there, when you get it to there, it's the same position. So then I'm like, well, surely on your technique, then it doesn't make a difference either.
Is there an argument that it's possible that both techniques work, but just depends on the type of player?
So I think definitely.
If you've got, using Tiger Woods just for an example, saying it didn't work for him, but there's surely players using that technique now that it does work for.
That's what I mean, and it didn't seem risky. Like I did read a thing with Tiger, and it was saying like you should never take a divot when you're practicing your short game, and this fella's whole philosophy is never take a divot.
Okay.
Even so, like from 30 yards or whatever, like dead shallow angle of attack, hit it with like the back of the club almost, slide it under and like pop the ball up. And to be fair, my consistency was a joke.
Was it?
It was just like little cock through, little wristy one. And then I started playing a few dead tight ones to like a back flag over the bunker with the technique of with my hands back for the flop shot, or the playing the flop shot on my front foot with the face open.
Yeah.
As I would, like with my hands lower, as a would have played it.
Do you know what would be good just for this as well, because we're talking short game specifically, is when we eventually get Alex Buchner on.
Yeah, see what he thinks.
Yeah, because he's a short game coach for a lot of top pros, and just see what his philosophy is. And we can put that to him and we can just say to him, look, these are the two techniques. Talk us through the pros and cons of both.
Well, in my eyes, if I'm loaded with David's technique in my mind and I've got Mike's as well, isn't it better to have it all?
It is, yeah.
So at one point, if,
shot
the,
selection,
if the grass is like nice and it's lying or whatever, because I was even saying to this guy, he was putting my ball on, like rolling it and talking to me as I was hitting shots, and he sort of had the basket by him. And then I was like, well, you keep giving me a perfect lie, so it's obviously going to come out nice. It was like sitting up a little half inch, you know, on a nice bit of semi.
Yeah.
So I was like, and he's like, oh yeah, then put it in this, in me divot pattern. And then he's like, same thing. And then when it went into the divot pattern, like with the same technique, it just popped up.
Right.
Like it was, I was buying it.
Yeah. Half the battle is understanding what it is you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be able to fully commit to it.
Well, 1,000,000%. And like, even I was trying to like make the lie worse and hit trickier shots, and like they were popping up and landing soft, like, and the sound of them did remind me of like the way, like when you hear Kinnear chip and it lands soft and like checks up a little touch and then rolls out.
Yeah.
Or sort of when you've played a few nice chips, but your technique's a bit different again, isn't it?
Well, I'll be honest, my technique was taught from Jim Payne when we were younger. I used to get short game lessons off Jim, and then I started getting short game lessons at Myersco. And one thing that Dom always said to me was that I break the wrist so much through impact, and that's how I generate so much spin.
Yeah.
And he said, I'd never want to correct that. I'd never want to try and correct that, because it would just send you chipping into a free throw, because it's so ingrained and it's just something that you've naturally built over certain chipping techniques.
But then it transfers to like when everything did go out your golf game and you were hitting it the worst, you still putted and chipped nicely.
Yeah.
So it just shows you that confidence is a massive factor.
You can see that with people who've got technically sound swings as well. So people who swing it technically well and get in all the right positions, they can probably step away from the game for a while and come back and still rip it.
But it's also how much effort you've put in now, as you said a minute ago, how much understanding you've got of them positions.
Yeah.
So if you could be getting into positions that you don't even know what they are, but they're in the textbook and you don't actually understand it or know it.
Yeah.
So then once you understand it and you're like, that's what I used to do. Felt that. That's nice. On top of the ball, hips through.
Yeah, and that's the whole education piece, what David does, doesn't he? When he's teaching you, he explains the reasons why he's telling you to get to certain places, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he's been telling me for years the same thing, but it's taking it on board and actually understanding it yourself.
Yeah.
So someone can tell you, interpreting
it the right way as well.
That's it, yeah. Oh, this is why you need to do that, because this happens. And then you're like, right, sounds. So you walk away and you think, I didn't really get that.
Well, it's off season now, isn't it? So this is an important time for us, especially me and you. If we want to, there's no competitions now, really. Now's a good
competitions where?
At the golf club, like medal competitions, qualifiers. No. Why?
I haven't got a club. You know what I mean?
No, but I think this is a good time to.
No, it is.
Back to the drawing board, as we say at this time every year. But
well, at least we're not giving up.
There you go.
We're still making a plan to fail again. But like when we were smashing it through the winter, we were going the range a bit and we were getting better.
Yeah.
It's just that one too many plates thing again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
We just need to make a diary, don't we, really, and like commit to like Wednesday's range night or something like that.
We'll get there.
We will. Obviously no golf from you then.
No, just took a bit of a break from it last week. Well, to be honest, I played 4 days in a row, really, didn't I? I had a little practice before I went to Scotland and then played 3 days in a row. So because of how bad it was, I just thought, fuck this. So the clubs got booted under the stairs and haven't seen them since. Bryson Long Drive competition.
Unbelievable scenes.
We've seen it for the first time last year, didn't he? Had a great effort, but this time got right to the final. Took it to the wire with him, his good friend Martin Borgmeyer.
Since he's went, it's become a thing, hasn't it? Like it's...
Yeah.
No one really cared about it 2 years ago, really, did they? Who knew anyone until that Berkshire was hitting 7 irons, 300 yards?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Bryson's brought a whole new audience and a whole new set of eyes to it.
Of course he has, yeah.
Him getting injured in the process last year from his big bulk up and trying to whack it,
yeah,
to coming back, to not giving up on what he was doing, to then come second, and then to go through on his last ball as well on the heat before.
Oh,
mate, it was quality. Like, I only seen it off little clips on Instagram, but it looked like a good bit of fun.
It was, yeah. Let's say it's something different, isn't it? Similar to Liv. I'm glad, different aspect to golf.
Yeah, I'm glad Bryson got his own back on that rope though. What is that about?
Did you Josh Allen took the piss as well. Do you know Josh Allen? He's the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, when he was walking, then he was moving.
Went under the rope, yeah. So I think they're good friends then.
Well, did you actually see the clip of him doing it?
When he does the boxing thing and then goes under and they all cheer?
No, the quick video of that quarterback.
Josh Allen? Yeah.
Did you see the next fella get hit by it?
No.
To the on the video, right? Watch it. The guy who's like, because the fella's holding the rope up.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a fella with a hat on who's walking, he's got a camera, and he gets hit by the rope like in the corner of the thing.
Yeah,
it's class.
Brilliant, yeah.
I didn't realise he was me. I thought he was doing something towards Bryson, but didn't realise they were friends.
Yeah, well, that Josh Allen always plays in the Pro-Am. AT&T
Pro-Am.
Yeah, he always plays there. So you know, I've seen the video of him where like he's got a ball in the rough and then like he can't chip it, so he just picks it up and throws it like an NFL ball.
Oh, was that him?
That's Josh Allen, yeah.
Ah, right, I see.
Yeah, so I don't know whether he's close to Bryson, but he loves his golf, all them NFL players do, so that was just a bit of banter by him. But
You've got to be close to him, haven't you? You don't just do that and it picks up media attention because it could be anything.
Yeah,
like you, how are you then meant to know? Unless you don't know what I mean.
But did you see Shane Lowry's tweet?
Like saying, oh, I don't know what's more embarrassing, like what's worse,
watching Bryson or the weather tomorrow.
Yeah, like it's shade, shots fired, like shots, in my eyes.
It's good for the rivalry, isn't it? We spoke last week, didn't we, about Rory coming out before the Dunhill Championships and saying that it's in the LIV Golf
Sport. That blew my mind.
At the beginning, you've got to understand when Rory was coming out and being so strong, he was calling it a non-starter, it's never going to work. And
no, then he was slowly even doing it at Wentworth. Like, I hate it. Yeah. I hate it that I have to go and see 18 of them there. It's like, what? Like, that's a good few months in there.
I think
that's why, you know, I hate to say it, throw shade on Rory, but he's got to be getting fed that information to say it. You don't just U-turn your mind like
well,
that.
Well, this is happening on his watch, isn't it? He's the chairman of the Player Advisory Council, or one of the chiefs there. So he is the, it's on his watch, isn't it? He's the one who's responsible for the players when it comes to being the spokesperson. So if he's not being vocal,
why is he? Monaghan hasn't turned around. Why is he turning around?
Maybe that's just because what he's, you know, what people take time reflect on things, don't they? And understanding that 10 months ago, when this was getting talked about, it was a load of shite. What's this going to be like? But now you've seen what it is. It's a serious, serious competition. They're playing for. We'll come on to it later because obviously the penultimate one in Bangkok for the individual and the money that's at stake and the individual prize as well as the team events. And they've got the concept and it's only 48 players. So
no, 1,000,000%.
I like that Shane's come out and said that because it does give that bit of rivalry and it's fun rivalry that it's not like...
Well, if the overall plan is, like, which everyone knows, it's probably going to happen, a PGA Tour versus LIV thing, it's starting now, isn't it?
If you're talking about growing the game and having a real rivalry, you'll have the President's Cup, the Ryder Cup, which are, as we know, the fantastic events. But then you've also got a LIV versus PGA Tour where it's real, real rivalry, where there's no, you're not representing your country, you're representing your tour.
I wonder, could you get like a triple threat thing? Because the PGA Tour is obviously going to be the American Ryder Cup
hell
team.
A cell, steel cage match.
Yeah, yeah. Money in the bank or whatever. Now imagine you had like the LIV team event, but you've got your LIV players versus your DP World or your European players, your President's Cup players, so you're the rest of the world, and your Americans. So like a four team ITA thing.
Okay, so you're mixing in.
Iron out details needed.
You love throwing a little spanner in there.
No, but
you?
It's like, it's...
I get the concept.
One-on-one, it's been done, hasn't it? It's like you want to be the champ, don't
so
you?
So the Americans play Europe in the Ryder Cup, the Americans play the Internationals in the President's Cup, and now you're saying, add LIV to that and let them all four of them go at it.
Basically, yeah. Or have a LIV team, have a PGA Tour team, which is the Americans, basically. Have an international team and a European team. So
So the Americans from the PGA Tour, anybody from the International, anyone from Europe and anyone from LIV.
Yeah. So then you go out and you do whatever.
Would you call it?
The World versus...
The World Cup.
Yeah, the World Cup. Yeah, exactly. Or whatever, yeah. Like, they have the World Cup of Golf, don't they? Is it in two balls or it's in four balls?
I don't think they do it no more, no.
Well, they used to have it.
They did used to have it, yeah, with the countries and two balls, wasn't it? Two-man teams.
So even if you had... I don't know. Well, I'll iron some details out on this one because it's a big, you know, you need about four golf courses, aren't you? there's gonna be a lot.
You're gonna need some referees as well.
We need the Norman today to come through on that Verizon Wireless thing where you can watch 10 screens as well because there's a lot going on. But
it is.
Listen, if golf's getting bigger and bigger and bigger in it, so it's
yeah,
that's what happens.
Hey, we're talking about a lot going on. There's a lot that's gone on this week in the world of golf. Should we bring it on to that time again?
Let's bring it.
It's that time again, y'all. The birdie bogey buzz, the birdie bogey buzz, birdie bogey buzz.
What's your birdie?
You're obviously the same as yours and everyone else who listens to the podcast.
Charlie Hull.
Belter.
Unbelievable, wasn't it?
Do you know what the best thing about it was? In an interview afterwards, she's changed person, by the way, since the last person who spoke to us. And she was like, I was excited. I wanted that putt to go and excited me.
Yeah.
So I could like knock mine in and it was like exciting. I was like, exciting? Is it in a mad way? Then I'd be wanting to miss you an easy ride in.
Yeah. The eagle putt.
Yeah, because even on the birdie putt on the hole before, that was from downtown, then the eagle putt's from a bit further away.
And then she has a chance on 18 as well. Lynn.
Inside Charlie, and you're thinking, this is... I thought when Charlie missed it, it was going to a playoff.
I did. I didn't expect that.
But then Charlie missed it right. And it was half like, not a mind game, but because Charlie missed it right, she then missed it left.
Yeah, she's overborrowed it.
She's overdone it, yeah. So, yeah. But it was coming from like, it was like the same angle, but obviously it wasn't sort of thing. So, loved the way she poured the champagne over her head as well.
Yeah,
she just got brilliant. The bottle and tipped it on her head. It was great.
What's good about the victory as well is obviously Lydia Ko, one of the most informed golfers on the LPGA Tour this season. If you look at obviously how she's come back to form in 2022, and she's obviously chasing Hull down the whole way, yeah. Tied at one point. Don't know whether Charlie was looking at leaderboards or that's what she does, but to have that caliber of player chasing you, to have that eagle going on 17, and then to have Lynn absolutely smoke one straight down the middle of 18, and you've still got to step
and
up.
She at rescue.
She was quite a way back. And even to take that flag on, I don't know if that was a bit of a pull or whatever, but to take that flag on with that 7-iron on 18, it was
I think you were playing for it because it touched down. When she stepped off it, I thought, oh my God, the head's gone here.
Yeah.
But then she just stepped up and like stuck it in there nice enough in it from where you want it. But if it stayed on, it's obviously stayed on the bank, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously the rest is history, but it was 264s, two like basically flawless.
Yeah.
In the 64 on Friday, I watched that, and she's three putted the 14th out of nowhere after having a few birdies, and it was like the next like four putts.
Yeah,
she hit like 10 foot past every time.
Well, even though it's been what 5 years? Is it 6 years?
I think
since
it's six. Yeah.
6 years since she's won when she won the CME Globe Championship, didn't she? She won that tournament. It has been coming. You know, she took on Nelly Korda in the Aramco and won that event. Do you know what I mean? She's finished tied fifth last week after a good event. She's had did she finish third in one of the majors this year?
Yeah.
So it has been coming. It's not as though she's just like come out of nowhere, but you're right to get yourself back in the winner's circle after so long when she's with someone who's so talented and so much promise, like bursting onto the scene at such a young age.
That's what I was about to say. It's like she's based on the whole thing. I think she was 16 or 17 playing in the Solheim Cup, so she's played like four Solheim Cups already, hasn't she? So for her to win quite early on at 20, like really, you're only really coming into saving your time at 26.
Yeah.
So although she hasn't won for 6 years, it's almost like she's only 26.
Well, that's one thing that Sophie Walker said on Sky as well when she was doing the interview. It's like this win could be the start of the Charlie Hull reign on the LPGA Tour because she's got that maturity now. She's obviously a multiple winner now. And by the way, she joins Laura Davis, Trish Johnson, Karen Stupples, and Georgia Hall as the only English people to win twice on the LPGA Tour. So puts a name in history there. Obviously, we all know what Laura Davis has gone on to do, so that'll take some catching. But
Did you see that list? Have you got the numbers there for that?
I've not got the full
list.
So
I think from memory, Hall had two.
Yeah.
And then that Stupples had like 15. And then
Trish Johnson
had like 17 or something, and Laura Davis had like 40. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Laura Davis is way ahead. Yeah,
or is Laura Davis on 20 and they were on like 7s and 8s? Either way, Laura Davis was a mile ahead in that race, wasn't she?
Yeah, she.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a legend in the game, isn't she? But of course, you know,
you are.
But Charlie Hull, what can you say? Hopefully, this is the start of a of a new reign in well, women's she, golf. For
as they say, if she kicks on and wins a few more times, world number one, like is that a far fetched shout to be saying, well, no, or is it in, moved, on the site?
She's moved to 16th in the world now, so.
There you go.
We've seen it happen before. Players from 16th in the world go to world number one. Look at Scottie Scheffler this year. A couple of wins and he went straight to number one.
You've got to start somewhere, haven't you?
You have, yeah. But she's moved from 34th to 17th in the race to the CME Globe as well. So, you know, that doesn't conclude till November. I think there's four or five tournaments left. So there's still a chance that she could be number one by the end of this year, really. It's just the way that she's playing, as long as she keeps the consistency up in a game, she'll be challenging week in, week out, because obviously she's a phenomenal golfer, isn't she?
1,000,000%.
And the putter seems to be working as well.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I watched that Rob Leader break down a swing, and then he was like looking at it and he went, yeah, there's so many things you just wouldn't teach on this swing, but it just works for Charlie. And then Sophie jumped straight in and was like, yeah, well, she fell off a bike when she was younger, so that's why she does this move. And that's why, you know what I mean? And he
similar
was,
to John Rahm.
Yeah, exactly. That's because I've just seen the John Rahm thing, then that's what triggered my memory. 20 wins, Laura Davis has got. So the other two were on 7 and 8.
7 and 8, yeah.
45 well, European Tour wins she's got, Laura Davis.
Wow.
87 professional wins worldwide.
Unbelievable.
From memory.
That also, obviously, just to conclude the birdie, just looking at the LPGA Tour and obviously how global the tour's become, Charlie Hull's win means that England become the 13th different country represented by winners this season on the LPGA Tour.
So no other English person's won this year?
No.
Wow.
So it just shows you. I don't know how many tournaments there's been this year, but just shows how vast the...
Well, yeah, because we had like a South African winner. We had an Austrian winner.
Leona Maguire's won. Ireland. We've got Lydia Ko.
Then we've had Minji Lee.
American winners. American. Korean, yeah.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
South African. We've
had Scottish.
Gemma Driver, did she win?
No, she's not won, no.
Scottish, not too sure.
No, but, you know, it just, yeah, the tour's getting better. And there's also...
No, of course. And it's Greg... nice, like, it's nice to see it on telly, and it's exciting.
Well, and Greg Norman done an interview as well. I don't have the quotes from the interview, but he was asked in particular about, will there be a LIV golf again? And he said it's at the forefront of the mind if we can put something together.
What, ladies?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what we said.
Yeah,
like we said, remember the three chairmen, can't remember who they are.
Yeah,
Sorenston, whoever.
Yeah,
and they said, listen, we can't not sit down with Liv.
No,
if they come knocking.
Yeah,
because you don't want to get into a shitstorm of what
the PGA
Tour. PGA Tours and the sort of got themselves into, do you?
Yeah,
where it's like we're just doing what we want anyway.
The benefit that the LPGA Tour have got as well is they've got a case study, haven't they? You know exactly what to expect.
Exactly.
Whereas the PGA Tour didn't know what to expect with it. So,
no.
You know, in hindsight, maybe they might have made different decisions about how they went about it, but it is what it is. Now, there's a good rivalry ahead for years to come. So,
well, it'll bring nicely onto my bust because, I mean, my bogey, sorry.
Yeah.
Is my bogey is like once again, Jay Monahan and his the way he's wording things and the way how he's speaking in interviews. This, he's like, they asked, like, can the PGA Tour and Liv sort of
come together?
Can they coexist? He sort of says, like, what is happening with the relationship? And he's like, well, I think words and actions are important. He said, I think it's impractical when you look at the fact that certain players have sued the PGA Tour. Their employer has sued the PGA Tour. It's not in the cards. It hasn't been on the cards, and it's not in the cards. I think we've been pretty consistent on that front. And then he's saying, can they coexist? I give the same answer. The answer is they've gone down their path. We've been pretty consistent that we're going down our own and we don't see it happening. I haven't and I don't. It's like, all right, well.
I understand that from a point of...
He's got to beat the same drum, I think.
PGA Tour players not playing LIV and LIV players not playing PGA Tour. Now that it's, I understand that. Stay in your lane and play your own tour. But they can surely coexist and have conversations around can we make the world rankings work? Yeah. How can we make the majors work? Is there a possibility where there is an invite for the Players' Championship if the players are playing well? So maybe three players from LIV or four players from LIV get a place in the Players if they can't get into the world rankings. But there's potential for that, but those conversations have got to happen.
It's DJ winning and playing so well. and being where he is in the world rankings, that's what the biggest alarm bell is. Like Rory said, if you think Dustin Johnson's the 89th best player in the world, then there's something wrong with you.
Well, the exact same thing's going to happen to Cam Smith as well.
Exactly, yeah.
This time next year, Cam Smith will be outside the world's top 100. And you're going to have DJ and Cam Smith not playing in majors, not playing in these big tournaments because the politics
sounds like a new polo range from a pedo.
Shout. The politics of it all. So even Adam Scott's come out and just said that live golf's not pure evil for the game. Maybe because he's a little less emotive about it, he can be a voice of reason from one side or another.
I've seen that.
He doesn't necessarily see live as pure evil for the game of golf. Hopefully we can get beyond people having shots at each other and each organisation can move on with what they want. I believe the PGA Tour has to do what's best for their product and Liv is going to do what's best for their product. I don't have a problem with either of them. He must listen to our podcast there, Adam Scott.
From a point of view of golf, there is no evil. No one's saying that. It's they have to go like further digging. No one really anymore is saying it's a bad product because it's fun to watch. It's entertaining. There's boss players, there's boss golf, there's boss prize money. It's just all source of funds. That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah. And that will always be the argument, won't it? Like people who are coming at it from a live perspective, the PGA Tour, they're looking at what Monaghan's spending his money on. He's getting private jets to different places and things like that. So then, yeah, it's one of them things that we just have to keep a close eye on. Hopefully it will get resolved. The live concept is good in my opinion from a golf perspective, and I think that will work and it will continue to work, and the team element is quite exciting. I think the PGA Tour, as always has been, is the best tour in the world. It will continue to be. It's got unbelievable players still there, so you've got two unbelievable products. Do they need to work together for golf to grow? I don't think so, but I do think that they need to work together from a world ranking perspective so that Liv's not excluded from big tournaments where they can come together, like we've seen at the BMW Championships, like we've seen at the Dunhill. If we can get competitions like that. And like we've said, that's where the DP World Tour could gain benefits from this. Those players like Taylor Gooch, DJ, Bryson, coming over and playing more European Tour events and, you know what I mean, more fans well, being at
exactly. So, we'll come on to them both in a minute. This week is a prime example of, because there was a Rory and a Fitzpatrick, Lowry, Tommy, like all these decent players.
Yeah.
DP World Tour event. The winner's getting 32 world ranking points. Whereas the other Liv player who won on the Asian Tour, what's his name?
Jedaiah,
whatever his name is. He got like 7 for that.
Yeah.
So Ewan got 8. Like what Ewan got 8. But then for winning the PGA Tour event this week, you're only getting 35.
Still so, more than the DP World
it
Tour.
It is still though. More, but what I'm saying is, if the live players are serious about getting the world ranking points outside of thing, the Asian Tour isn't the place to go. It's obviously the DP, and once the events get more stacked out, it just helps the DP World Tour.
Hasn't it? Keith Pelley's has come out and said that he's got a plan over the next couple of years. So maybe there is discussions being held behind closed doors where they are getting a guarantee for certain players to come over and play events. Because even this week in Spain, the pace isn't massive. It's quite small. But you still got John Rahm and Tommy Fleetwood turning up to play.
Yeah. Well, Rahm's won it a few times. He's
won
Spanish.
It two out the last three. And he always comes over for the Spanish. Like, I know that. But, you know, we could always pull out. Doesn't have to come over and play.
Suppose he could go and play the Shiners, couldn't he?
He could, yeah. He could. Well, my bogey is another podcast guest, Richard Mansell, coming so close. You know, taking a 4-shot lead, going into that final round. And it was great to watch him and Connor on telly going for it. It's just that double bogey early on just brought them close. And whether it was a bit of pressure, obviously it would have been pressure, wouldn't it? A couple of bad swings and all of a sudden he's caught and then he's chasing. And, you know, when you've got somebody like Ryan Fox, who's been phenomenal all season and he's going low on that day, it was inevitable what was potentially going to happen. And it was just
it was horrible
to see, because it would have been great for him to win. A win there would have got him into the top 20 of the DP World Tour rankings and up to 85th in the world rankings.
Yeah, it's a bigger... It's like you said, it's like Ewan winning 4 times, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's massive world ranking points.
Unbelievable. Yeah, would have put him to 85th in the world. That gets him in the PGA next year, gets him close to potentially getting in the Masters. Only has to move another 35 spots up. And top 50, he's up to 34th or 36th in the DP World Tour rankings now and top 50 getting the Tour Championship. So he's pretty much cemented his place there because he was 41st going into that event. So on the sort of borderline with a few bad events. So the good thing to come from it is that he's pretty much cemented his place at the Tour Championships, which is another opportunity for him. Yeah, but my bogey is just that it was
watching him
4-shot lead, and Ewan done it at the beginning of the season, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was it Kenya? He had like a 3-shot lead or 4-shot lead going into the final round at the beginning of the season. Ewan?
Can't think of it, you know.
I think it was in Kenya. And then he let that go, but then a couple of weeks later went on to win. You know, he's got himself in that position a couple of times, and he's had the second place finish this year, a number of different top 10s, top 10 again. So hopefully he's saving it all up for the big one, the Tour Champs. And if he wins that, then that's his career set for the next 5 years, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And it's unfortunate that he's had a bad final round and he's end up coming like tied seventh. But he's, like he said, he's knocking on the door.
Yeah.
He's putting himself in the right positions. You've got to be in it to win it.
I feel like he done the hard part on the Tuesday, shooting 68 in those. I mean, on
Tuesday,
the,
though.
On the Tuesday. On the Friday.
I know. One player. Well, yeah, he's my bust, Mansell, because just watching him dingo. But the main part of me bust is for winning, you got 801,000, and what he got was 121,000 for coming seventh. So, really, if he'd have shot level par, he's in a playoff with Ryan Fox. So, each bogey, because he shot four over, cost him 175 grand.
He
doesn't want to hear that, does he?
Doesn't want to hear that.
Interesting, it just shows you it's a big money game, isn't it?
It is at that level, yeah. I mean, that's what we said, didn't we? September's a big month for the DP World Tour. It's the big pace. If you can perform well within the month of September in those events, then you are going to quickly move up the rankings. And Ryan Fox proved that, because my bust is, and it'll bring us on to the Dunhill Links Championship as well, and some chat about that. I know we've just covered a bit of it, but my bust is Ryan Fox not getting his chance at the President's Cup. I just think he's 35 years of age. So far this season, he's lost in two playoffs. He's had another second place finish. He's finished third in another event. And all right, he'd only won one event at the time that it got picked, but he's now won two DP World Tour events. And then if you compare that to the players who got picked, so Immelman had six picks. He picked Ben Zayden, Hoot, Pendrith, Munoz, Cameron Davis, Siwoo Kim, and KH Lee. And out of those six that he picked, I can only think that Siwoo Kim and KH Lee have performed better this season than what Ryan Fox had up to that point. Ben Zayden, Hoot, he's 69th in the world now. Last season, he had one top 10, which was a second place finish in the John Deere Classic with no wins. Pendrith, who's 99th in the world now, he missed five cuts in 21 starts, three top 10s throughout the season with no wins. Munoz, 68th in the world at the moment, missed seven cuts in 25 starts, three top 10s, no wins. And Cameron Davis, 66th in the world, missed seven cuts in 25 starts, five top 10s and no wins. Right.
Missed cuts has Fox had, though?
Lately. But I think this is...
Because you told us all the positiveness about Ryan Fox and you told me everything negative about everyone else. So it's really biased, that one.
Three top 10s is not negative.
Yeah, but you didn't tell us how many missed cuts Fox had had.
Well, I'll tell you right now how many missed cuts he had.
Well, I do get what you're saying. He should have been picked. It's the tour, isn't it?
Well, this is what I was going to come on to next as part of me bust. So part of me bust was that, so Ryan Fox this season, where's his performances? Give us one sec.
This is a fact check live for doctors.
You just loves. Caught me off guard. Yeah, I didn't get his miscuts. He's such a good player. So yeah, let's go through it. So he's missed a cut at the Ras Al Khaimah. So he missed a cut at the beginning of the season, then won the next week, the Ras Al Khaimah Classic.
Yeah.
So that was his first win. Since then, he finished 15th, 9th, 8th, 2nd, made the cut at the USPJ Championship, finishing 54th. Then he finished 2nd, and then his first missed cut since the 6th of February was the 19th of June at the US Open. Then straight after the US Open, he finishes 3rd, then finishes 2nd. Then at the Scottish Open, finishes tied 47th, and then misses the cut at the Open, and then finishes 22nd at the Hero Open, then misses the cut. I think this is where it was probably the issue. He missed the cut at the Omega. So he missed the cut at the Open, finished tied 22nd at the Hero Open, missed the cut at the Omega, and had to withdraw from the PGA Champs.
Oh, she was going into the President's Cup with some form then, wasn't he?
Well, I think that might be the reason, yeah.
That's it, obviously. He could have been injured.
Potentially, yeah. But I just think if you look at that season there, you know, in between a missed cut, in between the two majors, the US Open and the PGA Championship, he's finished second, second, third, second.
No, it's good. He was having a good spell, yeah.
So what's your argument for him not getting picked then? Because I feel as though you're leaning towards...
No, the argument, there's no argument. It's just the rationale of why he didn't get picked is that he's become off a missed cut and a withdrawal. So you don't know if he's physically fit.
Yeah, but
he might have ruled himself out.
Ben Zayden, who Pendrith, Munoz and Davis aren't winning every week, are they?
Yeah, but they're not withdrawing. At least this, and you've got to remember a couple of big games that he's played in there, he's missed the cut. So he's a choke artist.
Right, let's move on to the Dunhill Links Championship. Then we talked, didn't we, about that second round of Mansell there, 68, which is unbelievable when you consider some of the scores I'm going to go through now. So I've done a comparison there of players, the shot difference from day one to day two. What do you think was the biggest margin? I don't know if you know this already, but from what you shot in day one to day two, what do you think the biggest margin was?
Well, that fella who shot 1,100 on the first day was nowhere to be seen in the second day, was he?
Yeah, Romain Langas.
Langas, yeah.
Yeah, well, he had a 19 shot difference. Wow. So he shot 61 to an 80, but that's not the only one. So Thomas Peters, your mate from last week, he had a 65, followed up with an 83.
Yeah.
So he had 18 shot difference. Paul Patterson, American guy. Shot a 67 first round, followed up with an 84,
no
17
way.
Shot difference. Alexander Knapp, who's number one on the challenge tour.
Oh, yeah.
He shot 72 opening round, followed up with an 88.
Wow.
16 shots.
Well, I seen a stat that Mansell shot 68, didn't he, on the old course? And there was 56 of the players who played the old course, not one of them shot under par.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, on the Mansell stat as well, there was only two other players who shot in the 60s. Out of the whole field across all courses. So Mansell shot that 68. Alex Noddin and Alex Fitzpatrick were the only two other players to shoot in the 60s.
Mostly, yeah.
Both shots a 69, yeah.
Wow.
But obviously they weren't playing the old course that day. But a couple of other players as well. Adrian Oost, Tristan Lawrence, Yannick Paul, Jonathan Caldwell, all players who've been playing well this season.
Yeah.
All 13 shot differences. And David Horse, he had a 15 shot difference. He shot 66, 81.
Just shows you, doesn't it, how much the weather does play a part up there. As you say, the Open. Imagine they had the Open this week and the things like that were happening in the Open.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's a lot more fun if we were doing it our way, innit? We play the Open now and put the Dunhill back to July.
They were talking about that, yeah. They were talking about that, about, like, imagine these conditions.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Like, they haven't had a breath of wind in two Opens.
No, I know. But, yeah, Alex Fitzpatrick, I've just mentioned him there. Another great finish for him.
Yeah.
And it was great for him on day three as well, obviously. Matt was playing with his mum, weren't he, partner, and Alex got paired with them that day. So, nice little family affair.
Probably hated it, didn't he? Do you know who else had a great finish? Moller.
He did, yeah. Yeah, absolute bombshell him.
He's a beast, isn't he?
It's at Miles, yeah.
And Alex Noddin had a little cheeky, like, he wasn't really around, but contending, and then all of a sudden, because Mansell drops a few, and, like, Rory just, like, tried his hardest, but, like, didn't.
Well, that's what I was going to speak to you about. Obviously, you look at the way Rich is playing, and I mentioned before Fox is playing with Rich, so and so was Noddin as well. Noddin wasn't playing his best, but he was sticking around.
He just had a sneaky tournament, Noddin,
yeah,
didn't he?
He was just sticking around, but Fox was the one who took control of the tournament and was charging forward. I think he got to 1,700 at one point, did he?
Yeah.
1,700 at one point, yeah. So, taking full advantage of obviously Mansell dropping off, but you're looking at, so obviously he knows what's going on in his own group, but then if you catch a leaderboard and you're seeing that Rory McIlroy's one back with like six or seven to play, does that have an impact on you?
Well, you're probably thinking, right, Rory's got the drivable hole there, he's got that there, like
the par five,
Rory could get to this score, so I need to get to this score, like it'd probably
push the button a bit too hard, yeah.
You could do, couldn't you?
Yeah. Because no matter what happens on that back nine, I know he got really unlucky on 11, didn't he, with the plug in the bunker. I mean, that could have landed anywhere in the bunker and give him at least a shot, but for it to plug up the face...
Who, Mansell?
Mansell.
Yeah.
And for it to have to go backwards, and then he made an unbelievable up and down for that bogey. And then the next hole, he stayed aggressive, got the driver out, obviously ends up in a bush, takes the penalty and makes a bogey there as well, back-to-back bogey, sort of pulled him out of it a bit, even though he still had the reachable par five to play. It just makes you think that, like, going back to me bust, what Ryan Fox has done, having to go through the field, not the field, he's playing last, he's second going into it, but he's having to shoot the score that he shot to get that win.
Yeah.
You know.
No, he only got season. It to 5 under, Ryan Fox.
Did he?
Yeah.
So he never got to 17 under, no, 16.
No, 16, he got it to, then he bogeyed 13, then he birdied 15, then he bogeyed the last.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of Alex Noren, did you see his shot on 18?
No.
Is it straight right out of bounds? It hit the wall and went to 20 foot.
Should have seen that. Do you know, I've seen a few videos of that happening.
Yeah, Mark Noble done the same thing as well.
Mark Noble's with bounces.
Yeah,
on the
yeah.
Thing. Yeah, there's a few that I've seen.
Went straight over right, but you know, another unbelievable tournament. I think I said before, the top 50 golfers in the race to the DP World Tour Championship point thing, whatever it's called.
What is that called?
It's not called Race 2 now, is it? It's just called DP World Tour Rankings.
Is it?
Yeah. They always say Race 2 to start with and realise it's not that. I don't have to go back on myself. But top 50 get in. So
it's just called the DP World Tour Rankings?
Yeah.
It's capped, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's the race to Dubai.
It is, yeah.
Still on this podcast.
That's fine, yeah.
Till they come up with a better name.
Yeah, so Rory, you know, another tournament where he's finishing, you know, second. It's just, was second or third did he finish in the end? Finished second, didn't he?
Rory finished fourth.
Yeah, Shinquin second with Noren, wasn't it?
Noren and Shinquin second, and then Rory tied fourth, yeah.
Just another reason why he's having such a phenomenal season, eh?
Well, it's like he even come on the, he had a 59 with his dad, didn't he, on the Saturday?
Yeah.
So then he's come out and he was standing with his dad, the proudest punch or whatever, but his dad actually was holding all the putts. He had a barnstormer on the Saturday, holding everything. But then Rory just come out and was like, look, I've got to go and shoot 8 under and make them shoot under par. That's my plan for tomorrow. And then he came out the gates.
6 under 212.
Looking like he was going to crack on and
just that par five, that. Yeah. And you could see the frustration. And he said, this fucking hole. when he made that par on the par five, it's a straight through. I was unlucky, really. The ball goes straight through the back of the green into the bunker. And then obviously puts it to about 8 foot and misses the putt. And then it's like the frustration comes out, doesn't it? Obviously, but just that hole seems to get him every time, he says.
It just seems to be that, as you've just said, he's up there or thereabouts every time he tees it up.
Phenomenal.
Like
season.
He is. In my eyes, the player of 2022.
Well, yeah, and you know, he won the FedEx Tour Championships, so he is the number one.
Yeah.
And he's going to win, by the looks of things, if he keeps up his form, the DP World
Tour.
So
he wins the DP World Tour Rankings Race to Dubai thing, whatever it's called. He wins the FedEx. He's come top 8 in 4 majors.
If he wins the FedEx, he'll become world number one as well. If he wins the Tour Championship, the final event, he'll become world number one.
Right, so...
Because he's close now to... He's caught right up to Scottie Scheffler.
Well, there you go. And then Scottie Scheffler, who hasn't done a tap since the Masters. Like, it's there's no doubt in my mind who the player of the year is.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. I agree, based on consistency, and he's won. He's won a couple of events as well. So it's not as though he's just hanging around. The only thing is, he's not won any majors, whereas Cam Smith won the Players in the Open, Scottie Scheffler won the Masters, Phoenix, and another 2 others. It's like,
yeah,
that was the argument, wasn't it?
That is the argument. And like if it was the most wins of the season award, then they'd get it, but it's not, is it? It's the player of the season. And I think that over a full season, they've had flashes in the pan and won big tournaments and peaked at the right time, whereas Rory's kept it.
I wouldn't say Cam Smith had flashes in the pan.
Wouldn't you?
No, he's won at the start of the season, the middle, and at the end.
Yeah, 3 flashes in the pan.
That's really good.
Well, he's, yeah, then, but he, like...
Went over to live and won.
I just wouldn't say he's had a good season as Rory.
I get your point.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I get your point about Rory, I really do. It is hard to argue the point that he's not played the year, but if I was going to argue it, I would say it stands to the fact he didn't win a major.
No, that's the only thing that he can say, isn't it, really?
Well, that's what I am saying.
But he comes second at the Masters.
Yeah, but no, Dunhill Links Championship never fails, does it?
No, brilliant.
Obviously, great format. It's great to see people playing with the parents and family occasions. And
I just like it when that putt resurfaces from Michael Phelps. It's the longest putt ever recorded on telly, isn't it? Like
unbelievable.
From downtown.
Do you know what was great about that, about the old events as well? Mark Noble marks his ball about 3 foot outside of the hole. Billy Horschel hits his putt. It's Mark Noble's marker. Hops and goes in. Just run over to each other, jumping all over each other. It's unbelievable.
Like that. With the hammers.
Yeah.
So weird the way he's a West Ham fan. It still blows me nuts.
It'd be interesting to know where that comes from. Do you know where that comes from?
No, it's like they just do weird, like the way you're a Rams fan.
Yeah.
But so imagine you were like become a celebrity and everyone's like, why is he a Rams fan? Well, like now that you are a celebrity, people are like, wow.
No, but yeah, but I can justify my Rams fan though.
I know, but like Ariel Hawani, who does the podcast for the UFC, like the interviews and all that,
yeah,
he's randomly. Someone was speaking to him at Nottingham Forest, so he was like, I'd love to go to Nottingham Forest. Sounds like a mad place. No, what a weird name. And then someone got him a ticket and went, and then he went, and now he's got like Nottingham Forest like badges on him and that. like Ryan Reynolds owns Wrexham. It's like they just do weird things.
Yeah, but mine is I was in St. Louis when it was the St. Louis Rams. So they were my home team. So I brought them home with me. And they've just changed to the LA Rams now.
Was that what happened?
Yeah.
They moved the annal.
Yeah. So then, the Las Vegas Raiders now, they were the Oakland. Is it Oakland?
See me on the 50-yard line with the Raiders.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh.
That's Steelers.
Steelers.
Pittsburgh Steelers, it is. But I think it was the Oakland Raiders. But it was something with O anyway for the Raiders. And then they moved the franchise to Vegas, built a stadium there. So now they're the last Vegas Raiders. So what happened with the Rams? The Rams were the St. Louis Rams, and I was in St. Louis and I was in America. So they were the home team to support with the NFL. So when we used to go and watch the NFL, that's who we'd go and watch. So then when they've moved to LA, they then become the Los Angeles Rams.
That's mad the way that happens. So they just move the whole, so it's like,
it's franchised, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's similar to what they're going to be doing with Liv. So Liv are going to have franchise teams.
Right.
So whoever sponsors the team, or I would imagine it's based on the franchise sponsor, yeah, they would probably get naming rights for it.
Wow. Like, I did not know that for some mad reason. Oakland it was, yeah?
Yeah, Oakland Raiders, yeah.
Oakland, and they were Super Bowl champs as well.
What?
Super Bowl champs in 1976, 1980. This is a full-on sports
shit.
From memory. It's a full-on sports podcast, this one.
It is, yeah. But that's my story. But it'd be interesting to see what Billy Horschel's story
is
for West Ham.
It'll just be one of them, like he found a ball marker. Practicing one day. I will be, honestly. Something like along them lines.
Potentially, yeah. Unless there's an American player who went over to West Ham who he was friends with or something. That can happen, can't it? Surprised there's not many more Evertonians with Joe Max Moore, to be honest.
Joe Max Moore or Tim Howard?
Tim Howard? Oh, yeah.
Landon Donovan?
Joe Max Moore, how do you like him? How do you like him?
Landon Donovan. Remember him?
Right.
Right. Sanderson Farms. Jinx, touch wood.
What have we got?
I've got another 6 years between victories for Mackenzie Hughes.
Yeah. Yeah, wins on the second
scrambling
playoff.
Scrambling animal.
Yeah.
23 out of 25 up and downs for the week, and one of them was in the playoff. Superb bunker shot.
Yeah, that was a tough shot, that as well. But even the way he played, just played there quicker. He knew straight away, that's good. Just walk straight out the bunker.
There was two videos of him over the ball, talking to the caddy, set up. And he's like, you like this club? Yeah, I like it. Okay, a little chasey one? Yeah, just chase that one up. Okay, bang. All right. And he's over the ball. Like, he didn't look up. He was looking at the ball, speaking. I was like, wow, this guy is composed. He stiffed it both times. Yeah.
Brilliant. He moves up from 83rd. To 51st in the world with those 35 points.
That's mad.
So he's just outside his chance to get in the Masters.
Well, if
you
speak him out, what do you call it? President's Cup?
Yeah.
Why wasn't he on it?
Well, because he hasn't won in 6 years.
But if he's only 50th in the world, where's Pendriff? Surely Pendriff is behind him, is he?
Yeah, it would have been going into that week, whether he was at the lead up to it, I'm not quite sure. But
I see, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, I think with the way the world ranking points is where, because if you look at, let's look at Mackenzie Hughes' season. So he's number one in the FedEx now, because he finished tied 25th, the opening event of the season. So he's had a good start to the season in the two events. But last season, he missed 11 cuts in 27 starts and recorded 3 top 10s. So I think on the PGA Tour, if you're recording those top 10s, a couple of 20 place finishes, a couple of 30 place finishes, you're going to keep your position between like anything from 40th in the world to 80th in the world.
Yeah.
You're always, whereas on other tours where the world ranking points aren't as strong, you have to win. You have to maybe have a Ryan Fox season.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Fox is up to 26th in the world rankings now. Yeah. And I've just told you all those results that he's had. Do you know what I mean? He went like four events, finishing second, third, second, second in four events in between the major. So it's just like, I think that's once you're on the PGA Tour, it's not easy to keep your car, but I think once you break into that top...
It's easier to stay afloat in the world rankings, yeah, obviously.
If you're a decent player, you don't have to turn up every week and win, and like you have to break into the top 10. I think he earned like $2 or $3 million last year, Mackenzie Hughes, just off floating about, so...
Floating about
the place.
Grafting his ass off every night on the range. And nah, he's floating about.
Floating about the place, finishing 20th on the PGA Tour every week, yeah. Like, that's an easy thing to do. Even going into this week, he missed 6 cuts in his last 10 starts.
Well, that's why he wasn't on the President's Cup team, then.
So, yeah, there's just, you know...
It must be something about this Sands and Farms and, like, a string of missed cuts, because... Gareth Higo had missed 15 cuts in his last 22 starts since he won on the PGA Tour, and he's just plonked in with a third place finish.
Well, even more to that, more to the point, he missed 12 cuts in his last 15 starts.
Well, there
and
you
then
go.
One of the cuts that he made was at the Zurich, which is a team event. So an individual out of four, he missed 12 out of 14, 12 cuts in 14 starts in individual tournaments.
Wow.
Making 2 cuts going into that event.
It's almost like in golf, the worse you're playing, the harder you're practicing. So the more you're likely your form is to like springboard.
Someone's
going to
quit eventually, yeah.
Yeah,
because you can't win like 3 times, like once in the PGA Tour, and was it 3 or 2 times in the European Tour in quick succession?
Yeah,
you can't do that and not have talent. So
well, of course you got talent.
It's obviously there, isn't it? Similar to what Robert.
But it's like when they win, it's like anything in it. You do something until you're like you're doing it decent, and then you take your foot off the gas and you think you've got this.
Yeah.
Like,
but it just
human,
goes, it goes to show though, Gareth Higo, he rose to 38th in the world rankings. That's his highest point he's ever got to. He was 166th entering this week.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's moved to 130th now, so making his way, but he's still outside the top 100 in the world.
Well, yeah, just as I said last week, I think I remember picking him in my picks loads, and then all of a sudden he was just dogging it around the place. I was like, get him out of my life.
Yeah. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors, because we've spoke about this in the past, haven't we? Maybe he's got to a point where, you know, he's financially secured himself. He's got his card. If there's ever a time at the age of, well, he's 23 now, would have been 22 last year, wouldn't he? If there's ever a time to maybe make a change or do something drastic with your golf game for the
Well, you've got future. A little, you've got that $500,000 in your pocket as well, haven't you?
Exactly. So, you know, I think, for him, he's only 23 years of age. I think we'll see him back in the winner's circle soon enough.
1,000,000%.
The talent he's got. And like I mentioned before there, similar to what Robert McIntyre done, he tried it on the PGA Tour, done okay, went back to Europe and won.
Yeah.
So obviously the experience he's getting from playing different events, it grows your stature and it grows your ability.
Do you think the game that they play, so for instance, Mackenzie Hughes coming down the last in regulation play, hooks it left, there's something on his line, like a wire or something, gets a drop. He's got a nice line of sight then. He's got the option to hit it long, puts it right up against the thing, gets a drop. He's basically on the putting green, 2 putts, gets in the playoff.
Yeah.
If me or you were playing that hole in anything that's not PGA Tour, we hit it, we're blocked out, we can go for the back of the green. It could go through the back of the green into
next
a different...
20 yards, yeah.
It's like having the rails up in the bowling.
Exact same thing happened to the Rory McIlroy on 18 at the Tour Championships at Eastleigh.
Yeah, where he went left. Exactly.
Snap hooked it, and it hits it at such a pace, and he gets a drop left. He's just got an easy chip.
It is half a different game, isn't it?
Same thing happened to DJ in the last live event, the one that he won where he held that putt, the one before last.
Yeah.
He hits his approach shot. It gets snagged up by the wires. He gets a drop. Can just chip it out.
There is an argument for it being a different course.
Yeah, well, once you get to that level, you know, these are just the things that they have.
It's the same for everyone.
Yeah, it's the same for everyone. It's just sometimes you get your luck, sometimes you don't. But I get what you're saying. On a different day, Sepp Straka wins that tournament. Yeah. He gets his second he gets a second PGA Tour win, not Mackenzie Hughes. So look,
he's
at
an absolute robot, by the way, Seb Straker.
Yeah, well, he's another one who, when we talk about missed cuts, he started last season poorly. He started with 5 missed cuts in his first 8 starts, and then he gets his win. And after that, he records the top 10 at the Players, finishing tied 9th. Then he has a 3rd-place finish at the RBC Heritage. And then he went and done 6 missed cuts in a row in a build-up for the FedEx.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. It must be just a mental thing, surely, because the ability doesn't change, or are they taking the foot off the gas because they've secured... At that point, he missed 6 cuts and still secured his place in the finals, then finished 2nd at the FedEx St. Jude, and all of a sudden he ends up getting to the Tour Championships and finishing 7th overall.
It's one of them. It's like sometimes human nature. Like, you know, like, if you have to wake up for work tomorrow, you get up and go, and you're there. If you have to wake up for the gym, it's half optional, so you just sometimes don't go.
Yeah.
So then it's like, he's got the luxury of like, right, I can do well next week and still get there. I can do well next week and still get there. I did do well the week after. Okay, now I'm here. Top 30, let's go.
Yeah.
So it's like you're half due sometimes. You know how to tread water enough to keep yourself alive.
I suppose that's a good point when we talk about the $500,000 that these players are getting.
Yeah.
They've got that security. Will that motivate some and demotivate others?
Well, you see Mackenzie Hughes there, when a little boy, like, turned up, looks like a few years old, definitely wasn't alive when he won last. You know, he had him in his arms, quite small. And that $500,000, like, if he's settled at home and or wherever he is, and he can travel with them, and they can say, right, let's all travel together, spend that extra few thousand on the hotel, extra flights and all that, rent a house, you're in your home comforts, and then you go out and win. Now all of a sudden you've got another million in the bank there to play 1.4 million in the bank there to play with. And you can keep whatever formula works, keep applying it.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's how you become a professional golfer, guys.
Right, yeah. But no, great trio of golf. Obviously, we've reviewed the LPGA Tour when we've done the birdie with Charlie Holwyn and that. Obviously, Richard Mantle's time's coming, but great win for Ryan Fox, continuing his form, and obviously Sanderson Farms, another good tournament. And they come in thick and fast as well. We've got another 3 to look forward to, starting with Live Golf Returns over in Bangkok.
Hey, do you know what? I actually watched The Hangover 2 on Saturday as well.
Did you?
You know where they go to Bangkok?
Yeah.
Jesus.
3? Isn't it 3 they go to Bangkok?
Nah, 2.
Is it 2?
Yeah.
What's he doing 3 then?
I think they go back to Vegas, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah.
And they were just clinging on for more dough there.
Unbelievable film, that.
Oh, mate. There's a scene in it. I know we've diverged a lot on this podcast, yeah. But the scene where, like, they've just woke up and, like, Phil's, like getting angry. And then they find the finger, and Stu starts, like, screaming. And he's like, And then, like, it goes to Alan, and he's going, and he's just crying his eyes out in the corner.
It's when he wakes up with a skinhead.
Yeah. Oh, my word.
So funny. I'm going to have to watch that when I get in.
I was laughing my head off at a few parts of it. One.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier, didn't we? This is the penultimate now. We've got obviously this for the individual tournament. So we've got this week in Bangkok, and then next week, or the week after, we've got over in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia for the final individual standing. So DJ leads the way on the individual point tally at 118 points with the 2 tournaments to go. He's followed by Brendan Grace, who's 2nd with 79 points, and Cam Smith, who's only played in 2 events. He's 3rd on 56 points. So looking at the way the pointing
system...
It's in
DJ's hands, isn't it?
Looking at the way the pointing system works, yeah, you get 40 points for a victory, and then it's obviously worked out based on your points, where you finish up to 24th. So only half the field get points for the individual. 2nd place, you get 30. 3rd place, you get 24. So looking at DJ's 62 points, is that ahead of Cam Smith with 2 events to go? So Cam needs to win both, really, to get 80 points. And up DJ has an absolute smelly one to...
So if he gets 80, he'll have, what, 116?
Well, if he gets 80, he'll have 136.
136.
So he'll be 18 points ahead of DJ. So then DJ will have to...
You'll have to have 2.
Well, you know, if he finishes... DJ would have to finish 10th twice to win by 2 points. So if DJ finishes outside the top 10 in those last two events and Cam Smith wins, Cam Smith takes the individual. A lot's got to happen considering how well DJ's
playing.
That's
it. And so then Smith will have played 4 events then, won't he?
Yeah, 4. Whereas DJ's played all 5 so far.
No, just because I didn't actually realise there was an individual championship on top of
the team,
the team event. Yeah, so the winner gets 18 million and second gets 8 and third gets 4. So, but you've got to have played 4 events.
Yeah.
So, I thought.
Well, Cam Smith gets the 4, doesn't he? Because he'll play the last two.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, so he's played the first two and then he's played the last two. So, yeah, we need, obviously, Brendan Grace, he's probably the only other person. Well, he is the only other person, really, unless DJ has really, really poor final two events who can catch him. He's a bit closer. He's on 79 points. So, they're the ones that you need to be looking out for this week for the individual standings, really. But then we come on to the team aspect. You told us last week, didn't you, about how the format's going to win. So they'll be looking, the top 4 will be looking to try and cement the place.
To get the buy.
To get the buy and then to get the picks as well. So at the moment, the top 4 is the 4 aces, followed by Stinger, followed by Majestics, and then followed by Crushers. And then chasing them in the next 4 are Fireballs, Torque, Smash and High Flyers. These names are fucking mad, aren't they? And then sitting third to last currently is Punch, who are now a very strong team. So I think for those top 4...
Who are Punch? The Aussies?
Punch of the Aussies, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think when you're in the top 4, I mean, obviously Punch have still got to qualify to get through to the next round, but if they do get through, I don't think any of them 4 will want to be pick and Punch.
No way.
Definitely not, no. But you've got quite a... This should be an interesting one, the Fireballs. You've got Torque, we've got Wacky and Neiman there outside the top 4. Smash as well, which is the Kepka brothers, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's another element that we get to look out for when we're watching Live this week, is the who's going to push on to get that top 4, to get the buy and the picks.
And it looks like... Well, I've seen Kevin Nair's caddy, because he bigged it up, don't he? Loves Liv.
He loves the aspect of how well the caddies are looked after when he goes in the
in the players' lounges and all that. But he was on the range and he was walking and there wasn't one divot. And it was, I think it says it's a brand new course.
Stonehill Golf Course,
just north of Bangkok, 7,591 yards, par 71. So it is a bit of a beast.
Like, that is a beast, that one, yeah.
So
looks in great shape, the course, doesn't it? If it is brand new, then yeah, you can.
It's a private members club, and it literally, if the driving range hasn't got a divot on it, then like, don't know what nick the course is. If they've had it closed, like, you think they probably would have, wouldn't they, expecting Live?
Yeah,
then it just looks like it's going to be a spectacle.
Yeah, what I look forward to about these events as well is obviously looking at new golf courses. When you're watching the PGA Tour, you get used to. There's two elements to it, really. When the Players is on, for example, or the Masters, you look forward to certain holes because you're used to it and you're watching it week in, week out. But it's also nice to see new courses on a tournament for the first time, and like being surprised by how players get tricked out by certain things.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, without much practice.
It's just a bit awkward at Live sometimes, isn't it? Because you're like, oh, this, he's on the first, but then like, he's not, he's on the 12th or something. Yeah, you're just like, oh, right, that's the 12th, is it?
But I did enjoy the shotgun start in day 2 at the Dunhill, to be honest. Having all the players out.
What about the Live troll?
What one?
Whoever does the Live Twitter has just put eyeballs like that looking at the at the shotgun start thing, saying like, isn't it mad the way since like all the beef, they've had a 54-hole event and they've had the shotgun start?
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
I know. Do you know what? Seeing like some people, I've seen that people reposting that and the eyes and stuff, and then people were straight to the defense. So there's been a shotgun start on the European Tour for years and all this, just like proper protecting it. It's, you know, point scoring competition, isn't it?
Exactly. It's shotgun start a part of golf. Obviously, there's been them all over the place, but it's just actually formatting it as part of your product to make things a bit different, getting held for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, like on Friday, it was more entertaining because of the conditions as well. Obviously, the wind, the rain, and seeing them struggle. We always like that once in a while, don't we? So
you do, I don't.
What?
You do.
I just think it's just a bit different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's good to watch them hit these pure shots all the time, but watching Mansell go around, shoot 68 in those conditions, and then
no, that was good.
And then it tunes into somebody else shooting an 85. Like, it's so sick.
Mad, isn't it?
Anyway, back to the DP World Tour then. Iconia Open de Espana.
Presented by Madrid.
Yeah, over
the Club de Campo Villa de Madrid golf course. 7,112 yards. This is the very quite short, that, isn't it?
Par 71,
all things
yeah.
considered.
No, it is, yeah. It is quite short, to be honest, yeah. This is the third time that this course is hosting this event, and two of the last three have been won by John Ram.
I know.
Who's back in the field.
But it was weird. It was like 2019, 2000, obviously because of COVID and all that, but even dating back a bit further than that, I think they didn't have a tournament in 2017, and they didn't have a tournament in 2017 for some reason.
Okay. Well, this is part of the Spanish swing now, isn't it? We've got three events in Spain in a row.
Yeah.
Before we go over to South Africa for the Nedbank and then finish at the Tour Champs, isn't it?
Was it three in Spain in a row, yeah?
Fact check that. I think so. I'm surprised, considering you've got the likes of John Rahm, Minwoo Lee, Tommy Fleetwood here this week, that we're not seeing the likes of Ewan Ferguson and Mansell turning up trying to get some extra world ranking points.
Yeah. Or even just trying to get a win.
Like, yeah. Mm.
Especially what sort of like practice are they going to be getting in the UK sort of thing?
Yeah, suppose, yeah. No, I know Mansell and Ferguson, they both played the JCB yesterday together.
Did they, yeah?
So, yeah.
Delta?
Doing some sort of practice, yeah. But Marcus Hillikiddle is back in the field this week. Obviously, he's had a okay back in form, isn't he, since returning from his prolonged break that he had at the beginning of this season?
Jordi Garcia's playing. Is he any relation to Sergio, do we know?
No idea.
Or is it one of them quite popular Spanish names?
It's like saying Jones. I think that's Jones in England, isn't it?
Is he? Yeah.
I would imagine so. But obviously, there is quite a strong Spanish contingency in the field this week. There was 11 national invites, two of those amateurs. So, you know, we could see the next Sergio Garcia, next John Rahm.
They're probably...
This is the opportunity they've got. Is Alex Fitzpatrick playing again?
Don't think so.
No, he's had a fantastic couple of events
in. I can see in the list.
Because what was good to see in the... I mentioned that Alex and Matt Fitzpatrick both played together, but the Højgaard twins played together as well on day three.
Oh, did they, huh?
Yeah, so...
No, Alex Fitzpatrick.
No, but Rafael Cabrera Bayo, defending champ.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one of the Spanish returners. The last three times it's been won by Spanish players as well.
Well, yeah, since Afi Barmrat was crying about having no tie players, Jazz Jane Watanant's in the field for him.
Is Afi Barmrat in the field?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, happy days.
He's come back over to join his countrymen.
Perfect.
But as you say, it's a strong Spanish showing, and I think John Rahm, you can't really look past John Rahm. I know he hasn't been in the greatest form, but going in...
No, you're right, yeah. He's familiar. He's won on that course before, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He
knows. I don't know, the last time I remember, he went over and just dogged it round.
That was
the
Valderrama.
Valderrama, yeah.
Yeah, shot like... Yeah, yeah. He didn't have a good return to the Spanish swing last season, did he?
No.
But hopefully it's different to say it's
this could be a good big tournament for Tommy, this.
Yeah.
He needs, like, obviously hasn't really been playing much, has he? And I've recorded our top 30 and whatever else he had the week before. But while he's got to be one of the favourites going in, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, well, he's going to be at the Tour Championships, isn't it? So if he wants a chance to win the Tour Champs going into that event, then these next 3 or 4 weeks are going to be big for him. He's won the Nedbank before, hasn't he? So that's I'm pretty sure he'll retain there if he's familiar with that place. So, be interesting to see how many weeks he plays in Spain. I don't see why he wouldn't play all three if he's over there now.
Well, if he's over there, you might as well just stay there, mightn't you?
Might as well, yeah.
Family can come over. It's only there, isn't it?
Yeah, but interesting to see what comes of that one.
Yeah. Who would you go for there if you had to pick?
I think you've got to go John Rahm, haven't you, really? I know it's the cop-out and the easy one, but yeah, given the fact that there's been three Spanish winners in the last 3 weeks. Adriano started with a 67. He shot an 80 the second round, but he did end up making the cut.
Yeah.
At the Dunhill last week. He's had a good vein of form, hasn't he, this season. Adriano is another one who I wouldn't shy away from.
Well, didn't he get into a playoff last year?
Is that what it was? Yeah,
I think so. Or was it the Lazabal?
Not sure.
It was a playoff last year. Who was defending champ?
Cabrera Bayo. Yeah.
I think it was Lazabal. Lazabal had that good run of form where he was. I think he won. Something happened. Then he come second in this.
Okay.
I think. Fact check that, but I'm pretty sure from memory that's what it is.
But yeah, I think we'll probably see another Spanish winner. That's what I would back. Either John Ram or Adrian Alcázar back.
Well, I'd say John Ram, but I want Tommy to win.
I want Tommy to win, yeah.
As always.
But I wouldn't mind Marcus Hilliard getting his first victory on the European Tour, given how good of a season he had last season, winning three times in the Challenge Tour.
Definitely.
On to the Shriners Children's Open then to conclude this week's podcast.
Well, defending champ was Sung Jae-im and he was 24 under.
Yeah. He's not the only one returning from the international team as well. You've got Cam Davis, Siwoo Kim, KH Lee, Mito Pereira.
Is that a mic in your pants there?
Taylor Pendrith and Ben Zadenhout, plus my man.
My man. No.
Tom Kim. Excites me.
Well, yeah.
Back in the field. But honestly, I'm going to be glued to the telly to watch him. I think he's, like, for me, one of the most exciting things to come out of golf for some time. And I hope he wins by a million.
It's hard, though, isn't it? Patrick Cantlay, he's no pushover, is he? And he's world number four, teeing it up.
And when you think of his form in Vegas as well, the last time he's been, he won in 2017, runner-up in 2018 and 19, and finished eighth in 2020.
That's it.
So, you know, Cantley's by far the favourite going in, but how good would it be just to have...
And Max Homer's there. He stuck it to Tom Kim.
Yeah.
President's Cup, so...
You did, yeah. I think what would be great, though, would be, obviously, Tom Kim, come of age, and he used my birdie last week. We spoke about it. Obviously, what he done in Asia, winning at 19, and to come over to win on the PGA Tour to get the President's Cup. In the President's Cup team, and then to obviously just go on off his head on the greens and what he was doing in the President's Cup, then to just turn up this week, win again, and imagine he just went on and just dominated.
I know we always pray for this, don't we? The next coming of age, but it's yet to be
seen. He's got the ability and he's got the charisma.
They all have, though, haven't they?
They have, but he's got, I don't know, there's just something about him.
You proper love him, don't you?
It's just good to see somebody you can, like, have that charisma, have that attitude, but back it up.
Yeah.
And I know it's only early in his career, and he's only won on the PGA Tour once, but he is only very young.
Can he speak much English? Like, have you heard him speak?
What? Have you not heard him speak?
No.
He can speak, like, five different languages.
What a gangster, man. I love him.
He sounds American when he speaks.
Oh, does he? Yeah. Yeah. I've never even heard him speak, me, no.
No?
No.
Where have you been the last 3 months?
Just here, chilling.
You've never heard Tom Kim speak?
No.
That's a strange one.
In fact, yeah, I did. In fact, tell a lie, because he was like, I did watch an interview with him where he was like, I've never actually started the tournament with a quadruple bogey before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he speaks perfect English, doesn't he?
He does, like.
Yeah, he's got it all.
He does. Another golfer to look out for, not any form to go by, but he's won this tournament twice, Martin Laird. He won it in 2009 and more recently in 2020.
Yeah.
So obviously, I don't know how he's going to perform, but just going off back off past performances, he does like it round here.
Jason Day is teeing up. Remember, he said he was going to make a reduced schedule because of his back and all that. He's only ever played once in Vegas. This is at the TPC Summerlin in Vegas, isn't it?
Yeah.
Par 71, 7,255 yards. But it's a strange one for Day to be picking, isn't it? Do you reckon he's just more just trying to get a jump on the rankings because he's got a limited schedule?
Yeah, maybe getting back into the swing of things. You know, he'll want to get in the Masters, won't he? So,
of course,
he's a million miles away from there now at the minute with his rankings. So,
doesn't he get nothing for winning majors? And it, like, your exemptions, have they gone?
Not sure whether he still have them. Something to fact check.
2015, when was the last time he won a major? 2015 or something, was it? Long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, so not too sure. But Alex Noren and Matt Wallace, they're two of the players who were in Dunhill last week, have travelled over to play this week.
Yeah.
So Alex Noren, another guy who's in form based on what we've seen last week at the Dunhill Links. Who would you fancy this week?
I'd have to go Cantlay, you know, or Homer.
Yeah, two favourites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homer, if I had to pick. Who are you? I know, I don't even know why I'm even asking that question.
Tom Kim.
What a waste of breath that was.
What a waste of breath. Yeah, Tom Kim by a million.
Yeah.
And on that note.
2015 PGA Championship was his last major.
Yeah, so 7 years.
Was his only major.
Tom Kim by a million. If I'm going to do a treble this week, I'm going to go for Cam Smith, Adrian Aus, Tom Kim. £2.50 each way will retain £1 million. That
I'd go for Patrick Homer, Max Homer, Charlie Hull, and Tommy Fleetwood.
Charlie Hull playing live, is she?
No, but you didn't. You just said treble, you didn't say.
Well, is there a LPGA tournament on this week?
Is there not?
We haven't reviewed it, have we?
I'm just saying, I'd like she's carrying some form. Like, why not?
Okay.
It's my bet, like.
I just don't know how the treble works if there's no event on.
Well, just wait till she plays again and she's in it.
That's your bet for next week, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, perfect. So what about, let's do a live treble.
All right, I'll have DJ then.
Okay, DJ.
DJ, Homer, Tommy.
Let's back them this week then.
Yeah.
See what comes of it.
Let's see what comes
of
it.
Talking of that, we are considering a total new concept of the podcast, aren't we?
Yeah.
Which will be a separate segment, really. So we're currently in talks with a number of people within different sports and considering a bit of a sports cast type.
We're just more betting. Of a stat-based bookies prediction betting site
podcast.
Think
of a new name app. For that.
It's just a site. It's a stat site. We're in talks with a guy who runs a stat site, and he's going to put the Bogey Boys like league that we were doing into it, plus do generate bets based on stats and odds and what goes on. So if the stats are kind to us, then we can make some money.
Well, that's it. So anyone who's played our Order of Merit tournament that we put on every year, I know this year, obviously, it sort of ended with about 10 events to go. So apologies for that to anyone who was playing in it. But obviously just other priorities took over. Everyone knows you've got the clothing brand coming in. Sometimes there's only so many hours in a day, isn't there?
There is.
So, but the whole point of us not being able to finish that league this season was because of how much time it took to pull all the information, the data together to release the league table. So what we're working on doing now is automating that and giving participants the option to log in. Yeah, log in. So what we'll be doing is we'll be pushing that out for the beginning of the 2023 year, probably the first tournament after the Century Tournament of Champions, and we'll be rerunning it throughout the full year. But we're going to be doing cash prizes every week. So if you're the highest point scorer that week, you'll win a cash prize. And obviously there'll be a cash prize for the winner overall too. So something to look out for on the social when we push that. But basically, in addition to that, as you know from playing the game, if you haven't, then obviously this is just information for you. We split the field into four pot selections and you get one pick, and then your points are determined on how your player performs. But there'll also be an option through the online portal that we're going to set up for you to back your picks as well in certain ways, whether it's for them to make the cut, have a top 10, and that'll link straight into a betting website.
In theory. This is all in theory, innit? So
this can be done.
No, it can be done, but we're going to pilot it and go through some vigorous testing before. Are you just backing it?
This is done.
Yeah,
this is okay. Done. I'm backing it. Right. I'll take the fall on it if it doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't happen. So, yeah, there'll be more news out on that.
You killed the last league, so you might as well kill this one as well.
Surprised you even know that we've done a league. Fucking hell.
I was looking on winning. I think that's why you pulled the plug, you cunt.
Right then, yeah. So look out for that. And also look out for the launch of our brand new clothing brand as well. We're really excited about that. Appear on Apparel, which is going to be launching in the next 4 to 6 weeks. If you've not followed our Instagram page, it's at @appearon_clothing. So Appearon spelled APEIRON_clothing. So give that a follow. Be grateful if you could support that. And I think you'll really like the clothing. We've spent a lot of time and effort in getting these perfected, haven't we, Kev?
So we have.
We'll be doing a number of launches every 2 to 3 months, bringing out new products all the time. So get ready for the takeover.
That's the plan.
And on that note, we'll see you all soon.
Ciao.
Thank you.